So, 2024 is over, and it's been a mixed year, I say. At least, that's my impression of the year. And in this episode, in this video here, I want to look back at 2024, but I'll give you my view on the year. I'll try to highlight the most important releases and trends I saw this year, but this is not necessarily a complete list, since I, of course, also don't follow every single development that might happen in the world of web development. But still, there have been a couple of important releases and events this year. But of course, since I said it's a mixed year, there also have been some problems or difficult times as a web developer, I would say. Because most importantly, the macroeconomic environment is still not that great. Or you could say it's back to the level we had before COVID. Though that would probably be wrong, because at least if you look at jobs in the US market, it's below the pre-COVID level. So we still got some catch up to do here. And of course, that is a problem. I have talked about this in separate episodes and videos, so I won't dive deeply into this now. But of course, less jobs, far less jobs than we had in 2020 and 2021, most importantly, means that it is, guess what, harder to find a job, and that being a web developer simply is harder since, well, you need some way of earning money, right? And that has definitely gotten more difficult. You could also say that now it's more important than ever to be a good web developer and not just a below average junior dev who doesn't really invest the time to become better. Because a couple of years ago, almost anyone who could write a single line of code got hired, at least you could get that feeling. Now it's definitely more difficult and you need to be better. You need to stand out to, well, earn money as a web developer, no matter if you are trying to work as a freelancer, get a job, or maybe also start your own thing. At the same time, maybe it's less important to be able to write code because we have AI, right? And that can also be a danger for us web developers or software engineers in general, because AI can replace us and do our work. Well, it's a difficult topic. I've also talked about this in previous videos and episodes. And of course, I think AI will take away some of the work we did. Because AI can write code, decent code, actually. I'm just not convinced it can solve super complex problems totally on its own anytime soon. Though, of course, nobody can tell what the future will bring us. But as a developer, not just as a web developer, of course, you should, in my opinion, embrace AI and its existence and use these tools to your advantage and learn how to efficiently work with GitHub Copilot, with Cursor, with all these other AI IDEs and plugins that come up almost every day. Be able to efficiently work with Claude or ChatGPT, and you know them all, right? So that is really important because, again, only the best developers, no matter in which area you're working, will stand out and win in the end. And the best developers are not necessarily the ones that write the best code. At least it's not just about that, but it's also about being efficient and leveraging all these tools you have. Because ultimately, as a developer, your job is to solve problems, and you can do that best in conjunction with AI. At this time, in my opinion. So, definitely challenging times where it's still worth it being a developer, but it's also definitely gotten harder compared to 3 or 4 years ago, I'd say. And that, of course, is definitely challenging, to say the least. Now, this is like the big picture, the current state of the industry, at least in my opinion. But let's dive a bit deeper into what actually happened this year in the industry. Which new frameworks and releases did we see? And Well, of course, we still got some new frameworks. We got TenStack Start, for example, a new framework you can use to build React apps in a easier way, hopefully, build full stack React apps and simplify the process of building complex React apps, just as you can do with Next.js or with Remix, which doesn't really exist anymore, or it does, but it became React Router, but I'll get back to this. So we had a new framework launch, TenStack Start, but my impression is that we're not seeing as many new frameworks anymore as we saw a couple of years ago, but that now it's more the evolution of the already existing frameworks that's interesting to us developers. For example, in this year, we got React 19, we got Angular 19, we got Svelte 5, we got Express.js 5, we got a new Express.js version after, what, 10 years or so? So that's interesting, and so on. So we got a bunch of new releases. And for example, React 19 mostly stabilized things that already existed, but only in canary releases before. So features like server components that already existed before, but weren't really easy to use. You had to use Next.js to tap into them. Now they're still not easy to use, but at least they're stable and the API has stabilized. And there also are some features like the new use hook, the simplified usage of refs, and a couple of other features that are available to every React developer and that hopefully help you simplify your React code base. We also got a beta version of the React compiler, which you can play around with already, which aims to automatically optimize your React code for production to basically reduce the amount of re-render cycles and to allow you to write simpler code in the end, and which at the same time wants to allow you to write simpler React code where you don't need to think as much about hooks like use callback and so on. And by the way, related to React 19, here's a shameless plug about the second edition of my React Key Concepts book. I released the first version, the first edition, back in late 2022, and I fully updated it, actually, earlier this year, within a few weeks, for React 19, just to then see that it would still take a couple of months for React 19 Stable to be released. But doesn't matter, React 19 Stable was released now. I again checked that nothing changed or that all the necessary adjustments are made to this second edition. And I'm now super happy to announce that this second edition will be released on January 14th and you can therefore pre-order it now to get it as soon as possible. You can of course also get it as an ebook if you prefer that, and you'll find a link to the book right below this video, and I hope you'll get a lot out of this book. I had a lot of fun writing it. I put all my knowledge in there, and I hope it will be helpful to you. So that's been interesting, also because it's been some time since we last got a big new React version, though I guess it's always been like this. They don't release a new version every year, unlike Angular, where we also got Angular 19 and 18 this year. But I'll get back to Angular in just a second, because when we talk about React, we should also talk about React Router, because React Router version 7 was released. And whilst this is mostly a backwards compatible version, you don't need to relearn how to use it, it is a very interesting new release, because essentially React Router is now what was Remix previously, so that extra React framework you could use to build full-stack React applications. That has now all been integrated into React Router so that you can use it for client-side React apps as you always did, but if you want to, you can also build more complex, possibly full-stack React applications and tap into certain React Router features like loaders and actions to build such applications, to build such full-stack React applications. And that, of course, is pretty interesting and pretty useful. It's also a smart move. I don't think it was a strategic move, but it's still a smart move by the React Router team, because React Router gets used by, I guess, almost every React app, And giving all these apps relatively easy access to a full stack framework in the end is, of course, a pretty good move, to put it like this, because that could really make React Router and what used to be Remix the winner in the React framework wars, if you wanna declare such wars. Because, of course, the other big React framework, the biggest, the most popular React framework, the most used React framework, I guess, is Next.js. And we also got a new version there, Next.js version 15. And Next.js is kind of difficult because, of course, we got the app router. We got that last year already, actually. And the app router gives us a new way of building Next.js applications. And it has many advantages, but it also has some problems. For example, when it was released as stable, it had very aggressive caching, such aggressive caching that you could end up in situations where you were not sure why your app wouldn't reflect updated data, for example. Performance during the build process, during development, also is still not ideal. It can be really slow to update pages and so on. And Next.js 15 definitely adds some important improvements there. It gives us less aggressive caching, hopefully leading to less problems we run into when building Next.js applications. And it also continuously adds or improves the performance during development so that development becomes more pleasant again. Now we'll have to see where Next.js takes us in the next versions, but this is definitely an important improvement. Still, having React Router and easy access to building full-stack applications with that is definitely interesting too. But enough about React. It's not the only library we have out there, because we also have Angular, for example. And Angular, for the last few years, has been on a path of steady improvement and has been, well, basically going through a renaissance where it became popular again and where it became interesting to work with again, where it gradually became a bit easier to use. And that started essentially with standalone components, many quality of life improvements, and now also signals, which were released as a stable feature this year. And signals give us a new way of managing state, managing reactivity in our Angular applications. It's a new mental model, but once you embrace it, it can be a bit easier to work with than what we had before. But most importantly, it also gives us a way towards leaner Angular bundles, less code that needs to be shipped to users, because signals will also in the future give us a way to ship Angular apps without Zone.js. You can already do that on experimental basis, but it will of course become stable probably next year in some future release. And Zone.js is just an extra library in the end, which Angular uses under the hood to detect changes or to detect things that could possibly lead to changes, that could possibly require state updates and page updates. And going through all these checks and listening for all these possible events that could mean that the page should update, as well as shipping all that extra code, is of course not ideal. So getting rid of it is a good idea, and that is one thing signals will enable in the future of Angular. And then there have been many other improvements as well, like typed forms, strictly typed forms, a better server-side rendering support with incremental rendering, a new syntax for conditional statements and loops in your templates, and much, much more. Just as with React, I have dedicated videos where I talk about these new Angular versions, of course. So Angular has definitely been following its path to becoming cool again and to becoming better and more popular and easier to use. And I guess we can be excited about all the new releases we'll get there next year. At the same time, as Angular always did, all these new features and changes have been introduced in a backwards compatible way so that you can use all these new features, but you don't have to switch instantly. And of course, you also don't have to upgrade to such a new Angular version if you don't want to use these features. But having all these developments, having this innovation in the Angular space, that's definitely been interesting. And we also had a big new framework, a meta framework built around Angular, become more and more popular throughout this year. AnalogJS is a framework that builds up on Angular, just as Next.js builds up on React, for example, to give you an even easier and more convenient way of authoring Angular applications, building Angular applications, and possibly building full stack Angular applications. So that's been amazing too. And with that, Angular now also has a really great meta framework, just as React has Next.js and React Router, Remix, TanStack Start, and as Vue has Nuxt, for example. Now, Vue, of course, also saw improvements, minor new releases, no big new major version this year. But Avenue, the developer, the main developer or the inventor of Vue, has been pretty busy improving Vite. Now, not alone, he has a team for Vue, for Vite, and so on. But Vite has become the de facto standard build tool for modern front-end JavaScript projects, no matter if it's a React project, an Angular project, because Angular also uses Vite to some extent, and of course also for Vue projects, Solid projects, Svelte projects, and I'll come back to Svelte in a second, and so on. So he's done amazing work there, giving us better front-end tooling, fast front-end tooling that makes development fun again. So that's that. You will likely not interact with Vite yourself too much. You can configure it for your requirements, but it's great to have it for all these other libraries and frameworks like React and Angular to use it and to embrace it, which ultimately gives us a better developer experience and also better frameworks and libraries to work with. Now, we also saw Svelte 5 being released this year, and Svelte 5 is the next big major version of Svelte, as you can tell by the name. And the interesting thing here is that it basically switched away to some extent to the syntax you know and maybe love from earlier Svelte versions, which is why it got some pushback initially, because now it looks a bit more like React and all these other libraries. It essentially also got signals now, just yet another syntax for using them, but it also got signals now called runes in Svelte world. But of course, this change, this evolution happened for a reason. It happened to make building more complex Svelte applications a bit easier, to help with performance and many other things. And it seems as if the community has now basically accepted the direction Svelte is moving towards to, and it's again everybody's darling, which is great because Svelte is a really great framework, compiler, library, whatever you want to call it, and you can use it to build amazing front-end applications or also full-stack web applications. It also has its own dedicated meta framework, which is wrapped around Svelte, just as React has Next.js, for example, so that you can build these kinds of applications too. Now also with Svelte 5, though. Okay, so that were a lot of new versions, but I'm not done yet. We also got a Tailwind 4 beta being released. Tailwind, of course, is the most popular and the de facto standard tool or library you would use for styling in most web applications, simply because it can simplify the process of building good-looking websites, and also because you can move very quickly when using it as a web developer. And now with all these AI tools knowing all these Tailwind CSS classes, AI can help you with using these Tailwind classes too. So that's some meta level of why Tailwind is amazing. Now, the new version aims to give you some quality of life improvements. For example, some class names that make a bit more sense, especially around spacing, but it is still a beta, so we will very likely still see some changes there. Still, it's interesting to know that we got a new version there too. Speaking of new versions, we got Express version 5b released this year. And that's pretty interesting because Express.js is, of course, still the most popular, the most used Node.js framework you can find out there. It is a great framework. It's simple to use, yet powerful, gives you lots of flexibility. There is a reason why it's so popular, even though there are, of course, many popular competitors too, like Fastify or Nest.js and many others. But now, after many, many, many years, we got a new major version released. It's actually still not the version you get by default when you run npm install express. That will likely change next year, I guess. But we have that version. And that version is essentially Express 4 with a few minor tweaks and improvements and one big improvement, and that's around using promises in your route handlers, in your middleware. Now, if a middleware rejects a promise, it will automatically trigger your error handling middleware, and you don't have to manually catch the error and manually forward it as you had to do it with Express 4. So that's really great, and it's great to see that Express.js is still somewhat actively maintained. And it's nice to see that new version being released. Now, speaking of Express and Node, Node.js also saw some pretty interesting releases this year, and you can tell that Dino 2, which was released this year, and Bun, which was released last year, that these competitors are really pushing Node.js in the right direction, in my opinion. It's really seeing a bit faster development cycles, if you can call it like this, bolder development regarding new features that are being shipped with new Node.js versions. There are many utility things built into Node.js now. There are interesting new APIs exposed by Node.js. And essentially, you can tell that all these interesting ideas, all this innovation that happened with Bun and Dino 2, the Node.js maintainers are fighting back and are trying to build as many good ideas as possible right into Node.js to give you less of a reason to switch to Bun or Dino 2. Now, of course, these alternative runtimes still give you certain features that are not in Node.js and that probably will never be there, and it's great to have these alternative runtimes, and you could absolutely consider using them. Therefore, of course, there's nothing wrong with this. It might actually be a good idea, but at the same time, the Node.js runtime is, of course, the most used JavaScript runtime when it comes to building backend applications with JavaScript. And therefore, it's good to see lots of innovation and evolution there as well. So thank you, Dino 2 and Bun. That's really amazing. Speaking of backend applications, by the way, I forgot to mention Astro.js, which is another JavaScript framework, but one that focuses primarily on building static or also dynamic, but mostly server rendered applications, though you can also, of course, build Astro applications that have front-end functionalities that use libraries like React or Angular. Yes, you can use these libraries inside of Astro because it's more like a meta framework again. And we saw some exciting new releases there as well this year, like the latest new release with Server Islands and lots of other interesting features. I'm personally using Astro a lot for my own side projects and other projects. It's really fun to work with. It's easy and powerful. It's convenient. It gives you a great developer experience. I like working with Astro, and I'm personally super interested in what we'll get there in the next year and how this framework will develop in the next years, because in my opinion, it really has the potential of becoming one of the most important and biggest web development frameworks out there. Unless AI takes away all our jobs first, and then everything will be React and maybe a bit of Angular, since that's where the most training data exists, I guess. But yeah, we'll see how that works out. Now, outside of web development, which is the area I'm most active in, though, but outside of that, we also got a new React Native version, which gives us the new architecture, which is a totally different way of how React Native works behind the scenes, under the hood, aiming to give us better performance, of course, and unlocking certain use cases or making it easier to build certain features than it was in the past. So that will be super interesting to see where that takes React Native in the next year and so on. Because, of course, you can already build amazing mobile apps with React Native, and now with better performance and an easier way of tapping into certain device functionalities and building native user experiences. With that unlocked, React Native will probably have an even brighter future ahead of it than it already had before. Now, Flutter is another pretty important tool, framework, library for building mobile applications, and I guess also web and desktop applications, though that's something I personally never did. And we saw some new minor versions being released there as well this year. It's still a great choice, really stable framework and tool for building mobile Android and iOS applications. But we also saw some one concerning development there this year, or one concerning event, you could say, and that's the fork of Flutter, Flutter Flock, which was announced in, I guess it was October, by people who were not happy with the development speed of Flutter, the innovation speed of Flutter, with the huge issue backlog and the suboptimal communication with the Flutter team. And this fork was created to build an alternative version of Flutter that incorporates many of the requests and features the community wants from Flutter, and which in the end aims to speed up development and the release of new features in Flutter. And that, as I discussed in a separate video and episode, is a bit concerning in my opinion, because of course if we start splitting the Flutter community, nobody might win in the end. At the same time, it's perfectly understandable that people get the impression that Flutter maybe is a bit stuck. Not a lot of innovation is happening there. We got more and more widgets. We got an endless amount of widgets, but things don't always fit together that well. It can be really hard to get into Flutter if you look at all the features that exist right now, because we had new features but no real cleanup. And at the same time, there are certain features and requests that have been demanded forever and nothing happens there. So there are good reasons why this fork was created. Still, it's kind of a concerning development there, and we'll see if that will play an important role in the future of Flutter in the next years. Well, and of course, there would probably be more to talk about. Definitely let me know in the comments what I missed or which important trends and releases you saw this year. And also let me know what you think about the future of web development. That's always super interesting for me because I only have my opinion, and that doesn't have to be the right one, of course. But that's been my year, my take on the year, my take on the new releases we saw there, and I'll hopefully see you back in the next year. Have a great Christmas, nice Christmas with your loved ones, and a happy new year.